The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. Ray on the other side of the glass, but even if he was on this side of the glass, believe me, he would be welcoming you as I do to the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. April just flying by here. It's April 18th, 2018. Yes, the air quality still is kind of iffy out there. We'll find out more about that. Beth Gorman joins us at about 12:30 today. Talk about Tucson's air quality. She's head of the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. She's actually the senior program manager. As usual on the Buckmaster Show, a very full agenda on AM 1030 KVOI. And of course, we have our worldwide live listening, which so many people are doing now. It's also known as live streaming the program at buckmastershow.com. And we get our feed from KVOI.com, KVOI.com 24/7 of feeds there. So put it all together, we've got you covered. 790-2040 is our live line number. Folks are welcome to call in the program. We have a newsmaker interview right at the beginning of the program with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. Dr. Trujillo is the superintendent of Tucson Unified, which is the second largest school district in the state of Arizona. Dr. Trujillo, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, Bill. It's great to be back.
Well, it is good to have you on the program, and I'm trying to keep with our trying to get you on every other month here on the program, and so much to talk about today. You were on quoted extensively in the Arizona Daily Star on the front page today, and it's the story everybody's talking about, and quite honestly, parents are wondering, educators are wondering what Arizona teachers are going to do. They are voting this week to decide whether or not all teachers are involved here, but I think a lot of them are voting on Friday. By Friday, we'll know whether or not there's going to be a teacher strike. What are some of your thoughts on all of this?
Well, as I said to the Star yesterday, I can only speak as the superintendent. I obviously don't speak for the board, but as their designee in charge of oversight and supervision of personnel in the district, this is not a job action against the Tucson Unified School District. We certainly don't. I don't view this as a confrontation between the teachers and the administration of the Tucson Unified School District. I support the overall goals of the Red for Ed movement, increased funding for public education. I support the walk-ins. I think those have been pretty effective.
Yeah, they're pretty much every Wednesday for the last five or six Wednesdays. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a great way to connect.
People wearing red, even if you're not a teacher. A lot of folks around town have worn red to support our teachers.
Absolutely. I support getting together before or after the workday, but I cannot and will not support any action that removes instruction from kids. That's the reason we're here. I remain hopeful that there are other avenues of collaboration that can be engaged in that would absolutely avoid that worst-case scenario.
And the Red for Ed movement, Dr. Trujillo, has built up a tremendous amount of goodwill, not only here in Tucson, but across the state. I'm wondering, and I know a lot of other people are wondering, if teachers do decide to walk out, go out on strike after the governor has in effect promised what would amount to a 20% raise over 3 years. And I know there are a lot of questions about where the money is going to come from, but I'm just wondering if that goodwill will be eroded if suddenly parents see that the kids aren't going to graduate. They'll still graduate, but they're not going to graduate as scheduled.
That's my immediate concern. As an enthusiast and a champion for public education my entire career, it's about the cause. It's about the campaign to put funding public education at the forefront of society's priorities, of government's priorities. That overall narrative will take a tremendous hit once a parent comes face to face with the prospect that their 12th grader no longer has their econ or government teacher with 3 weeks left to go in the school year, therefore unable to fulfill a graduation requirement and walk across the stage. That sets up a different narrative. When John Q. taxpayer is faced with the prospect of the school year extending at an additional cost. Now we have to provide more food services, more busing, bring back our hourly team members. It changes the narrative, and that is my concern. The district is currently involved in a process that we are planning a pretty comprehensive contingency plan so that we can continue some key services in the areas of food service and transportation, services to special education students in the event of a work stoppage. It is a contingency plan that I hope we do not have to use.
Would schools, in effect, you don't have enough teachers. There's a shortage of teachers anyway. You don't have enough teachers to staff if there's a walkout.
We would not have enough teachers to staff for a full-scale walkout. Most of our elementary schools, and we have 64, most of them have what I call a 25% tipping point, where if you can get 25% of the staff in the building, you might be able to run school for half a day, which would count as enough minutes to count it as an instructional day. It is in no way as rigorous or as effective as having a full day. But if you fall below 25% of your staff showing up in a great majority of our schools, you are what I call instructionally inoperable. Your class sizes would be way too huge for us to even consider keeping the building open. In those situations, we would look to keep the facility open strictly to provide some food services to kids that need it the most, maybe transportation to and from the cafeteria.
But it would be a administrative mess, I would think, because this would be each school be an on school-by-school basis, whether the school would be open and there'd be enough teachers there, right?
We would be on a school-by-school basis. We would.
And how
have,
many schools are in the portfolio?
We have 89. We have 89.
So there'd be 89 different possible scenarios.
You could have 89 different scenarios. And our contingency plan is attempting to tackle all of those issues. Once we do complete our contingency plan, I do plan, of course, on briefing our governing board members in terms of what that plan would look like, what would be the fiscal impact of that plan, what it would cost us if we were put into a situation where it would have to be enacted relatively quickly.
Because you have to meet a certain number of days, you're required by the government, by law, to have a what would be considered a full school year. How short are you at this very point of completing a school year?
We have all of our minutes and days calculated like down to the bare minimum. We don't have any of our schools that have any what I would call excess days. So we would literally be in a situation where we would have to extend the school year. Now, that only solves one of the challenges that a work stoppage, a potential work stoppage, would create. You also have the issue of academic certification. So even if a school did have all of its minutes, you still have the issue, let's take 12th grade, for example. You still have the issue at high school A. Even if high school A has met all of its minutes, if there's a work stoppage, it doesn't matter how many credits a kid has. He can have all, he or she can have all the credits. They can be a 4.6 GPA. They could be the top kid in the high school. Governing board policy and state statute requires that that student has econ, government, and senior English. So even if the school has met all of its minutes, if you have a work stoppage that removes the econ, the government, and the senior English teacher, we can't walk that student. That student wouldn't be able to graduate. So same thing happens at eighth grade. Same thing happens with teacher of record, grade entry that allows kids to promote from kindergarten to first, second, third throughout the system.
And of course, there would not be criminal charges, but the teachers would run the risk of that walking out would run the risk of simply being replaced as having abandoned their jobs. But that will be a decision, Dr. Trujillo, that will be on the backs of each of the school boards in the state of Arizona. And I have no idea, and maybe you know how many school boards there are in Arizona.
But yeah, we have it would be
how many? There's like 200 something districts.
Yeah, so each district would have to make the decision on disciplinary action, what route they're going to take with retaining teachers. Again, there's that word that keeps popping up. It's a mess. Words. It's a mess.
It's an incredibly challenging situation to try to plan for. There's such a set of unknown variables that make planning so difficult.
Let's see if we can squeeze a quick call in from Ingrid before we take our break. Go ahead, Ingrid. What's on your mind?
I'd like to know if it's possible for students to get a private tutor to fulfill the requirement of the government class and so forth. Why should they be held hostage? I think people should be allowed to get what they need in a different way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid.
That's a great question.
It is.
I hadn't thought of it. That is a great question. And in that situation, which I hope we can avoid, I remain optimistic, we would do everything possible to explore those types of avenues that Ingrid proposed, because we would be in an urgent situation. And in an urgent situation, you have to
think out of the box.
You got to think outside the box. And at the center of that thinking would be the student. Everything possible to try to help that 12th grader get certified to be a graduate.
All right. I'm behind when we should be taking our break. But have you ever been involved in work shortages or stoppages in your career?
This is a first in my career.
Oh, okay, good. I want to tell our listeners, Dr. Trujillo, about another fine partner that's just joined our team. Everybody loves bakery goods. I certainly do. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They're located in the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Steve is up at 3 o'clock, I think, in the morning doing all that baking. So the freshly baked bread would be so good right now, wouldn't it, on a sandwich? Go to the website, buckmastershow.com, for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery and all the fine sponsors. There's links to our great team. Be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our 3 new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Thursday, Pima County Supervisors Chairman Richard Elias will join us. It's been a very busy week for Pima County. We'll tell you all about it. Plus, Tucson Weekly Education blogger David Safir, Buckmaster, during the noon hour on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Worldwide live listening, BuckmasterShow.com. Welcome back. We have Dr. Trujillo with us, the superintendent of Tucson Unified. If you're just tuning in our first segment of the program with Dr. Trujillo, we talked about the contingency plan. And basically, the contingency plan is if teachers do decide they are going to walk out on Friday, is to keep facilities, kind of essential services going. Is that kind of the way you characterized it?
Yeah, that's how I would characterize it.
TUSD officials are proposing some big changes on how the district handles student discipline. You have said the goal is to better protect students and educators, and that really should be the goal.
That is the goal, and it's not only the goal, it's the priority. Better protect kids and educators, but then also we have to bring swift and immediate relief to the classroom teacher dealing with tough disciplinary conditions in the classroom. It has to be easier, not harder, to get access to an administrator. It has to be faster, not slower, to get your disciplinary referral looked at and processed, okay? And it has to be easier and quicker and more efficient to engage in interventions with the student and give them opportunities before you have to route it to the office for help.
And student fights are always a big deal, how to handle those.
The big proposal for us with student fights is now establishing in the disciplinary handbook known as the Guideline for Student Rights and Responsibilities, for the first time, actual language about fights. A mutually agreed upon physical altercation that does require an off-campus suspension. You've got to have the other kids see that something happened. And then for the two individuals involved in the fight, you got to have a cooling off period to prevent further escalation.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to try to get these revisions before the board by the end of the school year?
We are on a very aggressive timeline to get a final set of proposed revisions in front of our governing board by the end of June. I would like to give our board at least two study sessions. I really don't want our team in the habit of putting things in front of the board where they have to vote and it's the first time they're looking at it. We do have several working groups looking at our proposed revisions from the African American community, the Mexican American community. We've assembled some parents of students with disabilities to make sure we're inclusive of our special education parents. We have a rather large working group of teachers that we've assembled. And then, of course, our board members are offering commentary, as well as our plaintiff representative groups.
What's happening with security systems for the schools in light of the tragic shootings?
Thanks to our governing board a few Tuesdays ago, we were approved for an expenditure now to purchase and install keyless entry systems and surveillance cameras at the remaining 51 campuses that do not have them. This is a significant step forward in our promise and our commitment to parents to create as safe and as secure a school zone for their children as we possibly can. For parents, we're only going to ask their patience, as now those entrances are going to require them to dial in And then there will be a monitor monitoring every single visitor coming in through the main entrances of our campuses, where now our office staff will have the ability to electronically open doors and allow who comes into the school and who does not.
This is huge.
This is very big, absolutely. And this is something I'm proud to do for our parents and our kids. Their safety, our employee safety, remain this administrative team's number one priority and concern.
Well, this is going to be, there'll be obviously a cost.
There will be a cost.
Mm-hmm. How are those numbers?
Those numbers, it looks like we're going to clock in at just under $275,000. Mm-hmm. So each system is right around $5,000 to install.
Is it considered state-of-the-art?
Considered state-of-the-art, yes.
Of course, the district is still facing a budget shortfall for this year between $4.5 million to $6 million due to the declining enrollment. What's your latest thinking on that deficit?
Well, on that deficit, we are in the home stretch of putting together a budgetary reduction package that will end up being about $6.3 million in cost reductions and cuts that we've had to generate to be able to account for the enrollment loss and also to be able to put ourselves in a position to accomplish some of our goals instructionally and also for our employees for next school year.
You're going to have to cut staff then, I guess, huh?
We have. Mm-hmm. We've had some positions that luckily through retirements and through vacancies, we've been able to eliminate positions. We've been able to close positions. I've had to even start with me. I believe that I've got to lead the organization by example. I cut the superintendent's cabinet by taking out an entire layer of director positions. We've consolidated all of those into regional assistant superintendents. So we're trying to do our part as well in terms of adhering to our philosophy that cuts and budgetary reductions should happen as far away from schools as possible.
Our last visit, and we tried to have you on the program every other month, it was right before the board decided, well, actually, I think this was a good move to put all the board members in a setting, I guess we'd call this kind of a retreat. It was a day-long retreat where everybody kind of got together, sort of informally, right? And just talked, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How did that go?
I thought the retreat went really, really well. I think our board members are working very, very hard with each other. I think I see all of them trying to make some accommodations for each other's very different personality styles and leadership styles. And I applaud them. It's not an easy job. I think there are five leaders with different personalities, different beliefs about what Tucson Unified could be for kids and employees. And they get together every Tuesday night and they do their absolute very best.
And how do you see now the school year next year for the enrollment situation? What's your thinking on that? How does it look?
I am optimistic. I think that our shift in marketing from marketing the big district, the big amorphous TUSD, to shifting into marketing individual schools,
right,
I think has the potential to generate some renewed interest in the district and to bring in more neighborhood kids. People are generally more positive talking about their single neighborhood school than they are about the district at large. We've also revamped some of our open enrollment practices to make it easier, to make sure that we have less barriers for students and families coming from outside the district to get into our district schools.
And how are you doing, and this is something you introduced here on this program, a rebranding of TUSD to call it Tucson Unified?
We're doing a little bit better. I really am encountering more people in the community that are using the term Tucson Unified. I think some of our veteran employees, it's a little bit harder to get out of TUSD. I also see more in the community, I see more positive comments about people talking about their local school, and I just go with that. I don't try to shift things back to district-wide issues. I think the more people can talk about the great things going on at the school that their grandchild goes to or that their own son or daughter goes to, the better off we're going to be in being able to sell the district as a primary option for parents.
All right. So, again, we're just about out of time, but we will know what teachers are going to do. And again,
We don't know how many. What do you have any idea what percentage of the teachers are involved in the union? I've heard figures that's like 40 to 50%, maybe something like that, or is that perhaps high?
We don't have any access to that information. The Tucson Education Association is actually a separate entity from the district.
Right.
It's the recognized bargaining unit, but we don't have access to their membership directory or information.
Well, we'll find out what happens on Friday. Dr. Trujillo, thank you very much for coming on the program, giving us an update. And you do have a contingency plan, and hopefully you will not have to use it because, again, there are 89 schools in Tucson Unified, and each one could be on a case-by-case basis if the teachers decide to walk.
Absolutely. I want to thank you for having me back in, and I look forward to my next visit.
All right. We'll see you in about within 2 months, we'll have you back. All right. Let's take our break right now. The air quality has really been something of a concern here. We'll find out from Beth Gorman how things look right now in Tucson and Pima County. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are midway through the program on this midweek edition of Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI. We are Tucson's voice, and of course, we have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Let's go now on the live line to Beth Gorman. And we'll go to Beth in one moment. Thank you, Ray, for reminding me that Silver City, what a great getaway that would be right about now. It's cooler over there, and it's only a three-hour drive to Silver City, and there are so many recreation ideas, and they are available for you at southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find the complete listing of the many fine places to stay and the recreation opportunities, which include doing some camping, hiking, and exploring historic Silver City. Now we welcome Beth Gorman, Senior Program Manager, Pima County Environmental Quality Department, with us. Beth, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Bill. Much better. I'm looking out the window of my office, and I get to see the mountains today.
Really? Yeah, I noticed driving into the station, there was some improvement. If I had to say what it would be on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe we're at a 5. We've improved things.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's all, yeah, I mean, it was terrible yesterday, but the EPA, the way that the EPA health standard is for particulates, which is what we were seeing in the air yesterday, it's a 24-hour standard. So when the average, every single of the hours together from midnight to midnight yesterday, it actually came out so that we didn't exceed the standard. But there certainly were some hours yesterday where it was really bad. So we know the winds have stopped. It's not generating a bunch of dust, and it's not coming in. So it's kind of settling out. But as I understand it, it's going to be windy again tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. Yeah. And I think we lucked out, Beth Gorman. March can be really a windy month here in Tucson. It wasn't too bad. So now we've kind of getting in April here, these fronts, typically what happens, the weather system stays to the north of us. We get the wind,
yeah.
And it cools. The nice part of it is, like on a day like this after the wind event, mm-hmm. it cools it down a little bit. But we are going to get another windy day tomorrow. This can be difficult for people who do have issues, breathing issues, right?
Oh, I mean, think about it. You know, people who have respiratory disease, anyway, it's challenging for them to get the oxygen that they need. And then on a day where the air is filled with particles, they're breathing in the particles along with the air, and they're not getting the oxygen that they need. And it just makes it much more challenging for them to feel good and to get the energy and the air that they need. So it is a challenge. And those people, you know, we're hoping that they'll hear about it. They can go on our website. They can download in, you know, our information, and understand that those days where you can't see the mountains, then those are the days that you should reduce your exposure to the outside air.
And do you have real-time air quality update on the website?
We do, just right up to just a couple minutes after the hour, all the data changes. It comes in through the data loggers and gets into our system. So every hour, just a couple minutes after the hour, you'll be able to see just up to the hour air pollution information.
This is the ozone season. Could you explain what that is?
Yeah, and we've talked about that in the past. And when we talk about ground level ozone, we're not talking about the protective layer that's naturally occurring above us that protects us from the intense solar radiation. We're talking about a pollutant. It's created from basically from the things that we do during the day, our driving, putting fuel into our gas tanks, using lawnmowers, using paints and solvents, things that evaporate. Those combine together under the intense solar radiation that we have during the summer, and it forms this pollutant called ground-level ozone. So there's lots of things that we can do to help reduce the amount of ozone that's created. We're very, very close to that EPA health standard, and we don't want to go over that standard. We want to try to keep the air healthy. There's lots of things that folks can do to do that.
I've been trying to check the tire pressure almost every time I fill up with gas.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, at least once a month. Even if you have a sensor, those sensors sometimes don't kick in until your tires are 10% or even 20% low. So if you just get into the habit of checking your tire pressure once a month and then filling it up if it needs it, your tires are going to last much longer, you're going to use less gasoline, and your vehicle's going to emit less pollution. So it's great all around. It's a benefit for you and for the air.
Even 10 minutes a day idling a car really puts a lot of pollution in the air.
Yeah, and this is something, thanks for bringing that up. This is something that our department's going to start focusing on and trying to get people to think about the amount of idling that they do in their vehicle. And certainly there's times of the year where you need to because it's so hot. But there's so many times that I'm walking through a parking lot and I see people in their cars with the windows up and the engine going, and it's a beautiful day, and there's really no reason. So if you think about a couple minutes here, a couple minutes there that you're idling your vehicle, a combination of 10 minutes a day of idling your engine creates 340 pounds of air pollution a year on average. So if we can just try to reduce the amount of engine idling that we do by avoiding the drive-throughs, by just, you know, turning off the engine parking, going inside, it's going to add up and it's really going to help.
I see it at the supermarket parking lot. People will, they'll go into the supermarket, come out, turn on the car, they got the AC cranked up, and they're on the devices.
I know. Couldn't they do that inside? In the air conditioning? Yeah, I know. But I think it's just kind of habits that people, maybe if they start thinking about it and start hearing about it, hopefully we can change some of those habits.
Earth Day is coming up, isn't it?
Yay, yeah. It's this weekend, and it's being the festival that we have in Tucson, it's being celebrated on Saturday, April 21st, at the Downtown Children's Museum near Armory Park on 6th Avenue. And it's between 10 and 2, and it's going to be lots of fun. There's lots of exhibitors. There's fun activities for families. It's free. And then you also get free admission into the Children's Museum if you have your children and if the children are accompanied by an adult.
And it is free, I assume?
Right, yeah. The Children's Museum is free admission, and then the whole Earth Day event that will be outside in the Armory Park area and outside on the campus of the Children's Museum, that's free as well. And there's lots of fun things for families and people to do.
You know, going back to the ozone, is that season pretty much coincides with our summer season?
Right. Starts usually, we're seeing April sometimes that we start seeing some high levels. The thing about that's good about wind is it interferes with that photochemical reaction. So ozone likes very still, stagnant air when the sun is directly above us, which tends to happen from about April or May through September. That's what ozone likes, clear days with no winds. But so the the good thing about having the winds is that our ozone levels are low, but unfortunately the winds kick up the dust. So what can you do?
Well, it's good to hear there is a upside to the wind, because that's one of the few things I've ever heard about. Because I don't know many people that like wind in the desert, because it's
irritating and it dries you out. I notice I could just keep putting moisturizer on my hands.
Oh, yeah, and I've heard more people complaining of their allergies and the very low humidity, just drying out their throat. They're drinking copious amounts of water, which is probably a good thing. But anyway, Beth, we'll let you go, and hopefully one more day of this wind tomorrow, and then I don't know if the forecast maybe won't have any in the extended forecast. Beth Gorman,
let's hope so.
Thank you very much. Have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Humane Society of Southern Arizona's new location is open at 635 West Roger Road. Come fall in love with our pet-friendly cafe. Check out our giant cat habitats or meet a new dog friend in our doggy play yards. You can also bring your pet in for their vaccinations or spay-neuter surgery at our new state-of-the-art clinic. Come see all that we have to offer you and your pet at 635 West Roger Road. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona, saving your future best friend.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our three new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show as we push now toward 11 minutes before 1 o'clock here in Tucson, and a really nice day compared to what we have been getting with those high winds and dust. It'd be a great weekend to do some gardening, and all of your gardening supplies are available for you on 13 acres at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk. They are just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. You can go to their website, and I urge you to do so. It's a great starting point, greenthingsaz.com. The Arizona Center for Violence Prevention and Community Safety is based up at ASU, and they have just released the first statewide report produced on homicides here in Arizona. In other words, a murder rate report. And it's the first ever report that really gives some context about homicides in Arizona. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line is Charles Katz. Dr. Katz is a criminology professor at ASU. He is also director of the ASU Center for Violence Prevention and Community Service. Starting in 2015, the center began collecting data on all homicides and suicides in Arizona. Dr. Katz, how are you, sir?
Great. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for being with us. Tell me a little bit, give me a little context about this report and why it was done.
Yeah, we received funding from the Center for Disease Control to examine violent deaths in Arizona, as is done in about 40 other states. Under the Trump administration, they have moved forward to fund the other 10 states. We started to receive funding back in 2015. And what our job to do is to be somewhat of an observatory to examine trends in homicide and suicide across the state using data from police homicide reports, medical examiner reports, death certificates, and other information that we solicit from law enforcement agencies.
So share with our listeners some of the nuggets out of this report.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues is that we shouldn't necessarily be so Maricopa County and Pima County centric in the state, that a number of the counties and rural communities especially suffer from similar problems. In fact, the homicide rate was found to be the highest in Navajo County up north in the northeast side of the state, where we've also seen similar issues related to suicide, and that that we can't be forgetting about the rural communities when it comes down to some of these issues.
You looked at how many homicides, say, in the year 2015 in the state of Arizona?
We looked at about roughly 314 of them.
And what? Where did suicide play in this?
With this report, we have not released that report yet. We're still examining those issues, but we definitely, in looking at the data in the early stages, we're finding that suicide is particularly concentrated in rural communities, where it appears as if they don't have the same amount of resources as we have in urban areas that we can get people help when we need them.
Let's go back to Navajo County. That is a surprise about having the highest homicide rate per 100,000. Do we have any reason why that might be?
We don't know yet. The next stage is going to be meeting with some of the folks up there. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting in a couple weeks coming up where we'll be talking to some of the officials up there to learn a little bit about why they think some of these issues might be going on. One of the purposes of the project is for it to be able to identify early trends. That's what we're hoping to do, trying to get people to prioritize resources appropriately, and especially make sure that these resources aren't just concentrated in the areas where people assume that they're needed, but also in areas where but more importantly, focus on areas where we know that there's a problem.
Well, there's some very interesting information about that a particular time of year has the most homicides, and that, I believe, it's springtime.
That's a little weird.
Isn't that weird?
Compared to the rest of the country. Yeah, it is. In the rest of the country, it's typically in the summer.
Yeah.
In our state, the summer, I think, is so oppressively hot that people have a tendency of just staying inside where the air conditioning is. Interestingly, in June and July, it's when we have the fewest homicides in the state of Arizona, but instead we happen to see more homicides pop up in March, April, a little bit into May. We see an upsurge when kids start going back to school in August. But you're right, it's in the spring is where we see a bit of an uptick, which is contrary to what folks find in the rest of the country.
I guess July, everybody just turns up the AC and vegs out, as they say.
Absolutely. That's what I do.
Dr. Charles Katz is with us. Dr. Katz, a criminology professor up at ASU. He's also the director of the ASU Center for Violence Prevention and Community Service. How about ethnicity, ethnics group? Is there a particular, what are the majority of the victims and suspects? Are they white?
Well, what we know is that there's different risk based on your ethnicity, gender, age. And I think one of the things that we found that was most important was that we need to think about risk not in singular terms, like is what is a person's ethnicity or what is their gender or what is their age, but we can think about some of these factors as cumulative factors. And we found that if you're a male in the state of Arizona, the probability of you being the victim of a homicide is about 7 per 100,000. However, if you start to add up the different, you know, of the three risk factors, if you start to add them up, African-American males ages 15 to 34 at markedly higher risk for homicide. For example, in Arizona, about 67 out of every 100,000 homicides, per 100,000 population are victims of homicide, which is literally three times the next highest rate, which is for Native American, young Native American males. Young Native American males are killed at about 26 per 100,000 population, compared to African Americans at 67. Hispanics are fairly low when compared to those other two groups. It's about 14 per 100,000. An individual's risk is largely determined, we think, in Arizona, or is largely correlated to gender, age, and ethnicity.
Were most of the people murdered in their homes?
Well, interesting. You bring up an interesting issue. Most of the people who are the victim of a homicide in the state of Arizona are killed in their homes, in their own homes. And that shouldn't be surprising once we look at the individuals who are the suspects or the individuals who killed the victim. And that is because the offenders are most likely to be your family or your friends. It's very rare that it's a stranger. It's most likely to be a spouse, a child of yours, or a parent of yours, followed by your friends. But the stranger homicides are pretty rare in the state of Arizona.
So victims are much more likely to be killed by someone they know rather than by a stranger, correct?
Right. When I explain it to my classroom, or my students in my classroom, I typically try to get them to think about it in terms of, okay, are you nervous about being a victim of assault? Are you nervous about being a victim of a homicide? And try to get them to focus their energy on those around them who may be most likely to victimize them. And naturally, most people think about a stranger, somebody that they maybe only know on the periphery. And when you go through it and you actually look at who the offenders are, who the suspects are, and when they happen and where they happen, these are things that are involved with people who are in intimate relationships with you, that are the closest to you, and that people get into arguments and these things escalate and turn into life-changing events for everybody involved.
And again, Dr. Katz, you've accumulated now this information. How will it be used, and hopefully in a manner that will prevent further violence?
Well, our first stage in this is increasing public awareness. Mm-hmm. It is trying to identify where our data weaknesses are and where our strengths are. And it is in working with some of our key stakeholders in the case of homicide with law enforcement agencies and working with them to identify areas where they can improve their focus and attention, particularly in areas where perhaps they have not been focusing with regard to geographic areas and communities.
Do most states have what you have there at ASU with that center of our for violence prevention and community service?
No, I mean, ASU is in a rather unique position with regard to the opportunities mm-hmm. that we have with us. The center is a research arm of the college, and it is intended through a very kind donation from the public and a particular family in the public that they were interested in increasing social embeddedness, where we're working with agencies, working with the community to encourage violence prevention where appropriate. And that includes working with law enforcement, working with nonprofit agencies, as well as the community themselves.
Dr. Charles Katz, Professor, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. 1 minute now before 1 o'clock. Coming up this afternoon, we have Mike Check with Mike Shaw. Mike Shaw is ably assisted during his program from 4 to 6 by Ray Allen, my friend. And then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you. We've got the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. They've had a busy week. We'll find out what's going on with Richard Elias to be with us. Buckmaster at 12:04 tomorrow. Till then, on behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.